And we'll hear argument now, United States against Whitesides. Mr. Leon.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. The district court erred, both legally and factually, in triggering the drug premises enhancement. And those errors were not harmless. So we respectfully ask the court to vacate and remand for resentencing without the drug premises enhancement. I would like to start with the legal error. To support the enhancement, the record had to show that a primary purpose of Mr. Whitesides' home on Spruce Street was to manufacture, distribute, or store drugs. Mr. Whitesides lived in his home for 5 months before the arrest. Nothing in the record ties drugs to this home for the first 4 months of his residency. The record does show that he completed one drug sale during the final month of his residency, and the record does show that officers found less than 1 pound of methamphetamine and drug trafficking material on the last and the final day of his residency. This court's case has proved that is not enough to support the enhancement.
Well, that can't be right. If I lived in my house for 20 years and started using it at drug premises for only the last 6 months, I certainly couldn't argue, Judge, it's not, look, I lived there drug-free for 19 and a half years. Yeah, the last 6 months, certainly I used it as a drug house, but not for the first 19 and a half, therefore it can't be a drug house.
Well, that's not our argument.
Well, that's what you just said. You said for 4 months there was no evidence. He lived there for 5 months. For 4 months there was no evidence of drug dealing from the house. So what? That's my question.
Well, my answer is that I was just setting up the facts as they are, and conceding that there were some drug trafficking material in the home on the last day. But the government has the burden to prove that it was there for more than 1 day.
Why?
Because it's their burden to prove.
What difference does it make if it's more than 1 day? I mean, you convert it to a drug house on day 100, and you're arrested on day 100.
Because the record has to show that a primary purpose of this home was to manufacture, store, or distribute drugs. And I don't think
what's the temporal range?
Look at the court's decision in Kraft and Montgomery. So in Kraft, the defendant conceded that he had drugs there on several occasions, that he stored drugs on several occasions, and that he even used the drug proceeds to pay for his rent. This court said that was not enough. So I don't see how you could square Kraft and also this court's case.
Mr. Leon, what it seems to me is that you're arguing the DEA should not do one controlled by, they should do four.
No, they should show with evidence that drugs were in this house on more than two occasions during their entire stay, and they didn't.
Yes, so more controlled buys would do it.
No, testimony from an officer. They could have asked this officer on the stand to provide testimony on which days or any specific days that drugs were in this house, and it's just not there. And I don't think the stash house enhancement applies whenever the officers find drugs at home. That's not what this enhancement is about. And the commission said, we should compare lawful uses to illicit uses. And that's somewhat difficult in the context of a home because you're going to use a home for several lawful uses every day. But I don't think two illicit uses in the record can show that a primary purpose of his home, where he raised his children part-time, slept there, cooked there, ate there, was to distribute or store drugs. And so also, Your Honor, I think the government's brief, I would like to point out, it doesn't really dispute that one drug transaction and 1 day of storage failed to trigger the enhancement. The government instead thinks those two facts combined with the government's allegation that he sold drugs away from the home and that the government's allegation that he used the proceeds to finance his living expenses show that drugs were there for several months. But that just, again, going back to Kraft, it can't be squared with it. As Kraft explained, any alleged drug transactions by Mr. Whitesides away from the home at least suggest that he did not use the home as a premises. Otherwise, if it was a premises, why not just sell them there? It defeats the purpose if you're going to leave the drug premises to go sell drugs. And the government's allegation that Mr. Whitesides used the drug proceeds to finance his living expenses, one, is not a finding of the district court, And two, again, falls under Crabb because there the defendant conceded that he used the proceeds to pay his living expenses. For those simple reasons, we don't think the record can support the drug premises enhancement. I think the court drew a plausible red line in Montgomery and Crabb, and it should not and need not contradict those cases here. Now, I would like to move to harmless error unless the court has questions about the merits. The government bears the burden to prove the district court's mistaken guidelines calculation is harmless. The government must show that the mistaken guidelines range did not affect the district court's sentence in any way. This court has said that is a high bar, and it is one the government cannot meet here for many reasons. First, it's no stretch to conclude that the mistaken guidelines range affected the 188-month sentence, because the district court told us it did and even showed us that it did. On Appendix 102, the court states that it considered, quote, the sentencing range established for the applicable category of offense committed by the applicable category defendant as set forth in the guidelines. The district court then showed that the mistaken range affected the sentence in some way when it chose the precise sentence of 188 months, which is 15 and two-thirds of a year, that remarkably happens to land right at the top end of the wrong range that it landed at. I'm aware of no prior case in this circuit or in any circuit affirming an inoculating statement when the district court explicitly said it considered the mistaken range, considered the specific offense level, and landed at a precise sentence at the top of the mistaken range. Second, and independently, I would like to point out that the district court's attempt at an inoculating statement vaguely relied on the circumstances of the offense, but the parties agree that the district court misunderstood the circumstances of the offense in at least two ways. If the inoculating statement is not based on the record, as it should be, the statement must fail. Otherwise, we get really close to a due process violation under this court's precedent. I think just the fact that the district court said it considered the guidelines range twice and landed at 188 months is enough to show that the government cannot meet its burden. But should the court go further and actually address the inoculating statement, I think it fails Van Zandt's test. The inoculating statement must explain the parallel results, must illustrate how the error did not affect the ultimate outcome, and be detailed. But the district court never even mentioned the drug premises ruling in the 3553A analysis, never explained how his decision was untethered to the guidelines range or how 3553A excused consideration of the guidelines range. I think that is enough to reject the statement. If the court has no further questions, I would like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Clark.
Colin Clark on behalf of the United States. I'd like to start with a couple of record corrections. On page 2 of the reply brief, the Winfield case is described as that there were five occasions where there were pounds of drugs. It should have been ounces. On page 2 of the reply in that same chart, the Zamudio case refers to 10 pounds of drugs. It should have been kilograms. On page 8 of the reply, the Second Circuit Esteris case was described as being decided on plain error. Although the court generally described plain error, the issue we cited was not decided on plain error. The co-defendant's similar argument was, and we didn't cite those pages. The record, specifically the PSR, states that Ms. Kenesha Moreland and Mr. Whitesides shared equal physical care of their children. It doesn't say where or how, and it says that those kids used to go to Mr. Whiteside's house after school. But the brief, specifically pages 3 to 4 of the appellant brief, says that the children would exit the school bus at the Spruce Street home every day after school. And those details just aren't in the record, and that Kenesha would then pick up the children later in the evening or at night for the next school day. It's not there. While, as he says on page 3, that the children might have stayed there on evenings and weekends, again, the detail's not there.
Counsel, let me back up for a second. This case is primarily about applying the enhancement.
Yes, Your Honor.
When drug paraphernalia, drug dealing paraphernalia, is found after a search. There's very limited evidence of ongoing drug activity at that particular residence before that. There's a record that could be read either way. There's two different residences. There's some reference to Snapchats, but nothing in the record as to how often that particular residence was mentioned in the Snapchats. And so what's your limiting principle for application of this enhancement? Because in Ford, we said that that was likely the outside edge of this enhancement. How do you limit this enhancement to not apply to every time there's drugs found at a house?
This court has said that there are three main factors defining this enhancement. One is control. There's no dispute that Mr. Whiteside said sole control of the Spruce Street residence. Second is duration. The outer limit is 2 to 3 months. This is double that at 5 months. The third factor.
What's your evidence that it was used for 5 months as a drug premises?
So at pages, I believe, 38 or 39 and 61 of the transcript, there's discussion of there being a drug sale at or around the 7th Street house once a week during December, January, and February.
But we're not talking about the 7th Street house, right?
The whole purpose of the drug transactions is to talk about storage. And in order to meet a one-week drug transaction, there must be drugs. For a consistent demand, there must be a consistent supply. And so we have drug transactions elsewhere in Terre Haute in December, January, February, weekly. And then we have the known buy in April. And so what the PSR said at page 32 is that based on the record the probation officer had, that Spruce Street House was used to store methamphetamine. And the district court, after hearing the testimony, adopted that finding of fact. And so what we have is in 4 of those 5 months, we have drug transactions. And so similar to this court's case in, say, Contreras, where you have drug transactions over 2 months and then one later in the fall, this court's cases fit easily with this record. In fact, our record in terms of the amount of those transactions is arguably better. So then we also have the scales and the empty box of bags and the gun and the 422 grams of methamphetamine found in the house. All of that suggests that that is where the drugs were stored, because the drugs were there, and there's materials to package and sell and protect those drugs. And then we have the $14,000 to then go buy more drugs. To have on top of his liabilities, his personal liabilities, the rent, car payment, etc., to have $14,000 in hand to buy, as the factual basis says, a large amount of drugs, he must have had a substantial number of transactions to meet that demand. And so everything goes back to, was there a consistent demand over the course of these 5 months? And how was that demand met? Based on this record, which, as you say, can be read in multiple ways, the district court, by adopting the probation officer's finding, decided to read it in a way that those consistent transactions were met with consistent supply of drugs at the house. Now, had he attributed the 316 grams at South 7th Street to Mr. Whiteside's, which he did not, we would have a problem with the stash house enhancement. And so the limiting principle is that if he had attributed those 316 grams, we would have had to concede error on the stash house enhancement, because there was no control over that South 7th Street house. There's no evidence that he sold drugs there, and there's evidence that people were in and out of that house all the time.
So if Judge Sweeney had done what you asked below, there would have been error?
Yes, and I don't want to beat around the bush about that. There are a few issues in this record that we're going to admit in terms of, we wrote something in the PSR that we didn't end up proving, which is irrelevant because of the location of those items.
But doesn't the fact that there's two houses still come into play here? Your logic perhaps can, at a preponderance level, lead to a district court saying, well, there's a known storage location and there's a number of buys, so I can say that there must have been storage on more than one occasion. But if there's if you're arguing there's two storage locations, doesn't that kind of fall apart?
That's what we said. If the court had found there were two storage locations, the edifice would fall apart. But we didn't. The judge didn't find that those 316 grams applied to Mr. Whiteside's. They weren't attributed to him. And so that is not the record we have.
But he also didn't say, well, I don't think he ever stored any drugs there.
So the Snapchats, and when they seized his phone, the text messages and the Facebook say on many occasions, numerous occasions, no number given, that he was dealing out of South 7th Street, the area, then the house, and Spruce Street. And so combine that with the money, we just have lots and lots of transactions, but this enhancement cannot be predicated out of transactions out of Spruce Street. The record simply doesn't support it. It supports storage. And even Mr. Whiteside concedes on page 7 of his reply that storage of drugs for 60 to 90 days is enough to meet the enhancement. And presumably he's talking about the Zamudio case.
Doesn't it also support packaging? I thought that's what Judge Sweeney was getting at, that not only did he store the drugs in his residence, but he packaged the drugs there as well. He also gave his address to drug customers. Usually you only do that if you're going to conduct transactions out of the... I can't think of another reason why he would have done that under a preponderance standard.
And also, Judge Sweeney found that those drug customers were actual drug customers, which we believe he was entitled to find based on the record. But again, the customers have to get the drugs from somewhere. While the record could permit an inference that the drugs were stored elsewhere, that is not the, I would say it's not the best reading of the record, and it's also not what the judge found.
But it would be unusual, the gist of what I got Judge Sweeney to say was it would be unusual to store drugs and packaging material in one place, but remove them to another place for the purpose of packaging.
For the purpose,
it
yes.
It was all happening in the residence.
And the packaging is
that's
what you
the
need.
Significance of the scales and the baggies and et cetera, et cetera.
Yes, all I agree with everything you said, because the packaging is necessary to convert a stored 422 grams of methamphetamine into retail level sales, which you then take elsewhere to make those small transactions.
Maybe you take elsewhere. Maybe you just give your address to drug customers and have them come to your house and pick them up, seems to have been going on, I suspect.
To have $14,000 of profit when you don't have a job, and yes, I take Kraft's point about that not being relevant to that case, but without the drug business, there would be no Spruce Street. The rent was paid for with drug money, and without the drug money, there would be no Spruce Street residents to store the drugs. And because storage is central to this drug business, Kraft does not apply on all fours to this case. And if there are no more further questions, I'll end there and thank the court for its time.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Leon?
Thank you, Your Honor. The government says if there's a consistent amount of drug transactions anywhere in Terre Haute and they find drugs in a home, we can assume several months of drug storage. That's not enough. This court said so in Montgomery, it said so in Crabb. If this court takes the government's theory that it can assume several months of storage when officers find drugs in one place, Kraft and Montgomery both come out differently. There's no way to square the government's theory of drug storage with those two cases. Judge Kirsch, you did mention something about there were an ambiguous amount of drug customers receiving the Spruce Street address. Drug customers could be as little as two. And in Kraft, even three transactions that were conceded were not enough. So I don't think we can say that two transactions or two messages where the Spruce Street address was given for an unknown reason suffices. The government concedes that it can only prove this case on storage, and I ask the court to apply Montgomery and Kraft and rule for Mr. Whiteside. He received several extra years of prison that he wouldn't have gotten if the district court would have applied the law correctly. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Case is taken under advisement.